This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy94.9. Support Joy94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Real life is scarier than anything we can dream of,
and we dream such frightening things.
Sci-fi and Squeam. Be afraid.
Be very afraid.
On Joy 94.9.
So welcome to Sci-fi and Squeam, Jeff Maslett. Our show is, well, we do sci-fi and some horror and other genre. Yes, I've watched your film a couple times now. I'm very excited about it.
Thank you.
Because great. It's coming to be released here on the 27th at Acme, which is great.
Yeah.
Which you know all about. Good.
I'm excited. I wish I could be out there for it. You know, it seems like so far, at least the press has been positive, and the screening series that it's part of looked amazing when I was looking through the other films. I was like, wow. I'd just go and watch movies all month.
I would too. Like I said, we're an LGBTIQ, you know, the alphabet, the rainbow alphabet.
Yeah.
But it's hard always to get all of that content. So certainly the heteronormative world is totally fine by me.
Yeah.
No offense.
Thank you.
I hope I got your name right. Is it a silent T or?
Marslet. You got
Marslet?
It exactly right. I often tell people it's like a little Mars, a Marslet.
Maslett. Okay. All right. So who are you, Mr. Jeff Maslett? You've got this film called Mars that is going to be released here at the Australian Centre for the Moving Image here in Melbourne. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. You know, I have been making short films and parts of other people's films since, I guess, around 1997. So I don't know, what is that, 14 years or so. But Mars is my first feature film that I was the writer and director of. I'd made a couple dozen shorts and, again, you know, segments for other people's features, but I hadn't helmed my own until this piece. And it's something that an idea that had been rolling around in my head to make a film that basically compared and showed the similarities between romance and exploration. And around the same time, I did a music video for a band out of Texas where I wrote a software in order to be able to animate the video for that band. And it sort of opened up, it freed me up to do an animated film, the style that I really wanted to explore. And I went back to this idea of romance and exploration and said, hey, you know, what's sort of a better first date than a trip to Mars? And I no longer was limited where I would be shooting this live action to going to maybe a European city or out west, but I could go somewhere that is even more of the new frontier and let, you know, space be the setting for this story. So it was kind of a convergence of a lot of different things coming together at just the right time that made it possible for me to make Mars. And, you know, thought I would turn it around about a year, and years later I was wrapping up the film and very proud of it, but also realizing why people don't do independent animated features very often.
A bit of a learning curve, was it? Like trial by fire, I think it is?
It really was, because, you know, again, I've been teaching animation at the University, University of Texas here in Austin for about 10 years, and I've done a whole lot of short format, but there is something about, you know, once you start having hundreds of thousands of drawings, it becomes a very daunting experience.
You're learning, and so you're a native Texan?
Yes.
I've got that right?
I am.
Okay.
Born, grew up here, went and lived in New Mexico and Arizona and a little bit on the East Coast for a bit, and then came back here. Enjoy being a part of the Austin film community.
And I looked on your website that basically have a very varied background by the looks of it, history on mathematics, philosophy, art, science, and languages.
Yeah.
Wow. So is that something that you've obviously drawn on to make films like Mars?
Yeah. I mean, I think I have always had an interest in filmmaking. And when I graduated high school, I had considered going to college to be a filmmaker, but ultimately changed my mind and got a degree, a double major in mathematics and philosophy with minors in the history of science and language studies. So bounced around a lot of things. But that interest stayed there. And when I thought about doing some grad work in physics, I ended up kind of making a major turn and instead doing a graduate degree in filmmaking. One of the things that attracted me to physics and math and philosophy and all these other subjects is just, I really do enjoy learning things, learning new things. And filmmaking is interesting because it does still let you do that. You know, with a film like Mars, I was able to really dive into the way, you know, people really would prepare for space travel and for these long distance trips, yeah. and what kind of landers you would use and how robots are being designed and what are possibly cutting edge spacesuits and propulsion mm-hmm. systems. And I incorporated a lot of that, but I get this, it's sort of like you get to do that with the training wheels on, because when I study things like physics, if I really wanted to design a lander to land on Mars, there's a lot of little things that might go wrong, or we haven't quite perfected the science work. And when you're in real science, you have to make all those little things work, and you can get hung up on a tiny little detail for a career, you know, easily for 5 or 10 years, but some people spend a whole career solving some little thing that makes it hard to do that. In film, you can say, well, this is 98% going to work. I'll just wave my hand and magically fix that last 2%, and it becomes very exciting. You know, you often get credit for being smarter than you are then, because people are like, wow, you figured out how to do this 10 years before they really did. It's like, well, because I didn't have to really figure out how. I just had to see that they would be able to do this. And filmmaking is fun, because, you know, with each film I work on and each project, I get to delve into that subject matter and kind of immerse yourself in that for a year. And at the end of that year, you can pick another one, dive in. So for people, I think, that are like me and really, really enjoy a lot of different subject matter, and I don't know if it's good or bad, I get, you know, distracted by shiny objects and new things to learn all the time. But in filmmaking, you get to do that. It's even encouraged.
Yeah. It looks like you had a good time playing with some ideas, certainly. And you can actually see, because I've seen the film at least twice, you can actually see the research you've put into that and the knowledge that you seem to have. Like, I really love the fact also that you hark back to sort of old school sensibilities. You've got the telephone communications are like the brick phones.
Yeah.
I don't know if you call them brick phones in the States, but the big, clunky, humongous brick phones. I just had to laugh because I thought, okay, right.
Yeah, exactly. This is what they'd be using to do this. Yeah, that opening scene. It's interesting because, you know, some people get it quick and some people, I think, never quite see the humor in some of that. But, you know, I like this idea that, you know, those guys out there about to launch this ship are pulling a phone out that looks like, you know, it would have been 1978.
Yeah.
You know, with the large antenna. And, you know, it even on the side, it actually in Russian says space phone, I think is what we wrote on the side of that in the Cyrillic. But yeah, I mean, I think that hopefully a lot of this would appeal, some of the humor would appeal to the engineering and science types that I think stuff that often gets thought of as, oh, it's just boring science things. Those people doing that are having a good time and are laughing. And even if the jokes aren't sort of slapstick jokes, I think a lot of those jokes are the kind of charmers that you enjoy when you see it. But then, like in your case, you've seen it twice. I think a lot of times if people actually watch this film a second or third, think about it later on, at least for me, those types of jokes tend to stay with me longer. And I'm like, you know, I really kind of like that concept. Yeah.
And I really love the concept, too, of the spacesuits when Hank and Charlie are out to try and fix, spoiler alert, but if you're listening to this and you haven't seen the film, seriously, you've got the spacesuits, and I'm sorry, but they look like racing car driver outfits.
Oh. Yeah, I've often thought they look like you should be doing BMX racing.
Well, yeah, BMX in space. And I also love a little, what's it called, the profanity switch. I think it's inside their microphones and their helmets.
Yes, yes, yeah.
Hilarious, like brilliant.
That's one of the scenes I really particularly enjoy when I get chances to show just one piece. I often show them driving in that the buggy boat, because I think from a technical standpoint, I've always been really happy that, you know, that's really two actors sitting in front of a green screen doing like little kids do, where they bounce their knees in order to make it look like the car's shaking. You know, we have no actual car. We have no, you know, we're just sort of pointing a camera and making this on a shoestring. So I think that people watch that and they really feel like they're driving around somewhere. Even if people think it's movie magic, they're not on Mars. And I tell people they're not driving around anywhere. We're moving the camera around them while they basically sit still and bounce. And there's a guy sitting underneath them rotating the floor.
Right.
So from a visual standpoint, I've always been really proud of that. But I tend to think it's one of the funnier scenes I wrote. And it's funny because it also feels like that's the way the world works. You know, the posterity chip will go in there, you know, remove the things that people really say. So I think I like it because I think it's funny, has at least some social commentary, and looked really cool. Favorite of mine. And the spacesuits are great, too. It's funny you mention it, because we did some stuff with the spacesuits. In actuality, for a trip to Mars, you wouldn't want to use those, really, for going out on a spacewalk as much, but they talk about for actual spacesuit design for going to Mars, most of what they're looking at really using for potential missions are compression-based. So they look a lot more like racing suits than the old spacesuits, instead of pressurized, that you actually use cabling running through there. So what we did is we used ironing board material and then put cabling in it and sewed those together. So they're actually wearing ironing board material in those, which is terribly hot and uncomfortable. But they were fun to make. Now, there are some things, you know, I think they still would have been bulkier, and certainly there would have been a much more of a jetpack and helmet for a real spacewalk.
Yeah,
but we had a lot of fun making those.
It's got that real normalcy, like what people would do and say and the normal stuff. I've watched some of the moon landing excerpts that they didn't show you, and you know, it's interesting the sort of playing, the playful nature between Armstrong and Aldrin and other astronauts whose names I can't think of because they're not the important ones.
Sorry. Yeah, we only remember the first couple. It's really true.
And I love the fact that you had them waltzing on, another spoiler alert, on the actual planet, the red planet itself, because that was gorgeous.
Hi, Pollyanna McIntosh. You're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9.
Yeah, I when I introduce the film sometimes, I tell folks sitting down, I say, you know, you saw sci-fi, and if you came here expecting a lot of explosions and space battles, you're probably going to be disappointed. No, if you brought a date or you're sitting next to someone cute in the audience, you're probably in for a good experience because there's going to be kissing and dancing and swimming and all of those kinds of things in this one. But it is fun because I think that's what people, you know, on a serious serious side to this, I do think that trips people will take eventually to other planets will be in many ways more like this, some sort of super rigid experience, you know, people might imagine, because it's really about spending 6 or 8 months sitting in the equivalent of a hotel room, just drifting somewhere with a few people, and you're going to get on their nerves, and you're going to get to know them, and you're going to find things you like and dislike about them, and in the end, it's going to be real people having to kill a lot of bored time in space. And I think, you know, I think that's going to be a bigger challenge than one would expect, and I think it'll result in a lot more, you know, of what we didn't, like you said, the stuff that they didn't mainly show you about the space trips to the moon, that really people are up there also thinking this is pretty cool, and they're also having regular conversations, and they're playing poker in their downtime and doing all those kinds of things.
I'm from New Zealand, so there's a Kiwi connection there. You've got female character, the female astronaut, Dr. Casey Cook, coming from New Zealand, and that's referred to a couple of times in the film. What's the story behind that?
I wanted that character to be someone who was not American and who was not traditionally, you know, ESA and European Space Agency. Those are two of the big ones, you know, and then if you throw in maybe Russia and China, those are who you think of going to space. So I wanted her character to be very fresh, very separate from that and the baggage that's come with those. So I wanted to put her coming from another part of the world. And, you know, I think really both New Zealand and Australia have had, Australian in some major ways, had a lot of impacts on the space programs of some of their countries, but get forgotten about in a lot of that. So that was really the impetus for setting it out there. And, you know, I thought about maybe choosing an Asian country or some of these other options. I also like the idea that it feels very, very far away and sort of idyllic, that she came out of this place that's worked in its own government, its own history. You know, I mean, there's obviously a complicated history to every country, but New Zealand, I think, has done a pretty good job of trying to preserve nature to some degree, trying to maybe do a little bit better job than other folks have done. And that's kind of her, you know, her slant when she comes into this. So that was a lot of the impetus for choosing New Zealand. And we even, one thing that's kind of fun there is I play the role of her dad in the
flashback. I was going to say, yes, how did you manage to get the accent? You did pretty good.
Yeah, it sounded pretty decent, right?
Should I say you did pretty good?
Yeah, what I actually did is he's a musician. He definitely has records out, I think, in New Zealand. I don't know how famous, but Hanan Townsend, who had been here working with Terrence Malick, doing some music in Austin, and I talked him into coming and recording my voice for me. So though I play the role, I actually got a guy from New Zealand to do it, because I was doing such a bad job of imitating the accent. I was like, you know, I'm terrible. He's got to be better. So he came in and did it, but matched my... It was still a little tough for him because he had to match the speed with which I talked, and I spoke relatively slowly, and I think it seems most of the Kiwi accent usually goes a little quicker, so he had to draw it out a little, gave it a little Texas draw.
That's good. Sounds pretty authentic, and also it's nice to have a Kiwi there first, because Aussies get all the claim for most things, although they can have Russell Crowe.
First human being on another planet in my film is not just a woman, but it's a woman from New Zealand.
It's a New Zealand Chuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm Japanese. Nishimura Yoshihiro desu. Soshite.
And this is Mark Walko, and we are from Sushi Typhoon.
Yay! This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Join 94.9.
All right, so what happens to Mars next? Well, the film, that is, it's going to be playing here at Acme from the 27th of December for a long play, which is when they play them two or three times a day, which is so cool. Where to next? Is that the end of it? Because it's been out since, what, 2010?
Yeah, over there? We premiered at South by Southwest in March of 2010, but we're just starting to roll out. You know, it's really just done mostly festival and very small limited runs up till now. We're starting to roll out the commercial stuff. You know, I don't know exactly the markets, how it's going to work. We're working with Netflix, you know, here in the States, and working out some deals for international TV stuff. Certainly, we're still trying to look for some more theatrical options to tour it so it can get, you know, not just maybe spread out to other parts of Australia or other countries. And we will be, I think, in about 10 days launching the DVDs from our own website. Buy that. If they enjoy it, there's another 15 minutes worth of deleted scenes. There's the green screen version. There's an alternate ending. There's several. We put a lot of fun extra stuff on there for people that maybe really enjoyed this and wanted to get even more. But so we're really now we're looking, this is sort of the beginning of trying to get it out there in a more commercial environment so more people can see it rather than just festivals and special screenings. That's one of the things that really excited me about this series is that it does play several times a day and you can actually go and, you know, if you can't make that one screening at 7 p.m. on a Wednesday, you could still come back the next day and see it.
Oh, no, that's cool. And of course, everybody's calling it the slacker interplanetary rom-com. That's hard to live down.
I feel like I'm happy to fall into that category. I do think, you know, when I try and tell people they ought to take a chance and watch it, it may not be their favorite movie when they get out of it, but I think that almost no one that takes the time to go see this will, at the very least, everyone who comes to see this film will feel like they got to see something very different. There's not a lot of movies like this out there.
I think it
takes a very different take on sci-fi and even, you know, a very original take on the method we used to animate it. So hopefully people will enjoy that. And even a different take on relationships, you know, with the idea of love as exploration, you know, really, I think that it so much gets people think of this one idea of what a romance is. And I hope, at least in the film, it says romance is any time, any two beings, kind of regardless, you know, man, woman, robot, planet, whatever, have this interest in this relationship with one another that relationship is like exploration in a sense. As soon as they come together, neither one is ever what they saw across that room. They're never what the other one thought they were approaching. So, you know, Earth and Mars and this planet change each other, and the astronauts change each other, and everyone changes each other, just like exploring happens. The minute you step in a new world, you change it, and it changes you. I hope that kind of idea is also in there, which I think are more adult ideas than necessarily animation often delivers. And I hope they can sink into people in kind of a fun way.
Well, it's a great film. And as far as sci-fi goes, I must admit, I really enjoyed it. It reminded me a little bit of American Astronaut, the Corey Maccabee. Just that sensibility and that airiness and low budget, doesn't look it. I mean, it's very good production values there. I don't know how else to describe it, but fantastic. It's been great having you on Sci-Fi and Squeam tonight. I just wanted to ask you a question. We're doing horror hotties for the ladies tonight, horror and sci-fi hotties. Women in sci-fi that, you know, you thought, or had her on your wall when you were growing up. Do you have one? Can you think of one off the top of your head?
I mean, off the top of my head. Yeah. Because I was born in the 70s, I think none of us can avoid the Princess Leia as far as the first one that usually comes to mind, you know, having grown up and gone to all of those movies when they first opened. So she would probably be first. Let me see if I can come off the top of my head quickly another maybe more obscure choice that is particularly good. Yeah. Well, here's one that's not really a hottie, but a girl I particularly always liked. In only the loosest of sci-fi, but Miyazaki, it kind of counts. If you ever watch Spirited Away, one of my favorite animated characters has always been now I don't even remember her name, but the protagonist. She's a 13-year-old girl kind of falling in love with a violin maker.
I know the one you mean. Interesting. Very interesting. Animated character hottie.
I don't know if she counts as a hottie, but she's at least one of those characters I always thought, this character is so cool. I always there was a sequel to that movie that had nothing to do with her relationship with the other little kid, but I always wanted to see more of that. So there's two opposite ends of the spectrum.
Definitely. All right, but you're an animator, so it makes sense. That's totally fine. Yeah. The psychologists don't need to get worried. All right. Thank you so much for talking to us on Sci-Fi and Squeam, Jeff Marslett. Been great having you on the line. So that's me pretending it's the end of the interview. And I wondered, before they do snatch you away, if it's possible for you to say a tag ID for my show. Would that be cool?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to.
So it's obviously your name, whatever you like to say about yourself and the film you have. And it's you're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam. That's with a Q.
Sci-Fi and Squeam?
Like Squeam. Squeamish. Yeah, perfect. On Joy 94.9.
Okay, let's see if I get this right.
Go for it.
Hello, this is Jeff Marslet, the director of the film Mars, and you are listening to Sci-Fi Squeam on Joy FM 94.9.
It's Sci-Fi and Squeam.
Sci-Fi and Squeam.
Yes.
On 94.9.
Perfect.
Can you chop those in and make it sound like I did it right?
Yeah, no, that'll be perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, and so you've got a project coming up next. You've got next
I do. I just finished two things, in the process of two things. I directed one segment of we did a remake of the film Slacker. I don't know if you ever saw Richard Linklater's film about
that.
Austin. For the 20th anniversary, they got 22 of us filmmakers who live in Austin now to each redo a scene, and we remade the whole film. And I did one at Mind Stars. I don't know if you know the animator Don Hertzfeld. He's in there, and Heather Kafka, kind of fun musician. But I'm really proud of that. I think I really like the segment. I included a puppet in there as well as regular human beings. It's a live action piece, but I think it turned out really well. And I took a lot of the same crew that I used shooting that short, and in September I shot a new feature called Loves Her Gun that is a little bit of stop motion, but the rest is live action. It's a it's a drama, so it's kind of a little different than what I did with Mars, you know, being a comedy, but it still I think shares kind of my crazy whimsical
world. Is it genre or is it
really about a woman who gets attacked in New York City and tries to kind of get away from some of that and moves down to Austin with this band and sort of starts working with another woman and sort of falls in this kind of gun culture there. But one of the things I really like doing it is I think that in independent films especially, you get these kind of cool pieces. You get movies that are sometimes about the complications of a character, what's good and bad in them, but almost always, you know, dudes get to play those roles and women in independent film get they get to be the girlfriend or they get to be like just the Angelina Jolie action hero kind of feel, but not kind of nowhere in between. One of the things I was really proud of this, I co-wrote it with Lauren Motory, and it's really designed to be a film about this woman. You see both where she has legitimate concerns and you sympathize with her and where she kind of goes too far and causes some of her own problems, and you get to see the complications of a character being good and bad. And I just think in a lot of independent cinema, women don't get those roles as often, and that made me kind of excited to make this particular one. And I think much like Mars, even though that's set on Mars, and this one's actually set in New York and in Texas, I think it has a very Texas feel about it.
Did you say it was animated as well? No, this one's live action.
I did a little bit of special effects work where I did some stop motion stuff, but the bulk of it live action. But it's got cool rock songs in it again. I don't know. I'm really happy with it. I'll be curious what people who enjoyed Mars. Yes,
well, I love the soundtrack for Mars. You've got Nico Case, one of my favorites I've seen here. John Coventino from Calectico.
Yes.
I said that right, I don't know. And, of course, Howie Galb from Giant Sand. Love it.
Yeah, they are really, you know, Hal's an old friend of mine, as are Joey and John. And, Hal wrote the soundtrack, and he really, I think, couldn't have been happier. You know, when he said he was interested in doing it, that's someone that I grew up listening to and was just, as I told him, I couldn't think of anyone I'd rather do this. And we actually spent a long time recording that, and was one of the most fun parts of making that film.
And of course, Kinky Friedman. I mean, it's the president of the United States. In a great alternate reality. Wouldn't that be cool?
One day he'll become president and he'll send Mark Duplass to space, and I'll be like, I'll sit around, I have predicted the future. I'll be like Arthur C. Clarke. You know?
Well, hopefully we'll all be around by that stage. That'll be great.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, I better let you go.
You guys are always in tomorrow talking
we're
to
in
me
tomorrow,
tonight.
That's right. We're in the future. It's still there.
Yeah.
The world's still there.
I really enjoyed it. I really appreciate you guys taking the time, because with a film like this, you know, being a small film coming from Texas, being so far away, showing in Australia, that without you guys taking notice of it and letting people know, you know, no one would even know what's happening and be there. So I really can't thank you guys enough for taking the time to cover it. And,
my pleasure. Our pleasure. And of course, it's coinciding with all these wonderful Star Voyager, all these wonderful space themed exhibition at ACME. You know, alongside 2001: A Space Odyssey. You know, you've got Kubrick, so you're in good company.
I know. I have to admit, I played at 50 or 60 festivals this year, and I think when I looked at the list of other films I was showing with there, I think that's my favorite list, hands down, of other films I played with. I was like, because even some of your new ones, you've got like Moon there, and some of the best of what I've seen recently. So I was thrilled. I was like, this is a fantastic program.
Gosh, Moon would look great if that was animated with your particular technique.
Yeah, I think they could do it.
You could do the remake.
Team up with him one of these days. Yeah.
You do the remake for Duncan Jones, you know, throw a bit of source code in there and maybe Ziggy Stardust. I mean, with that sort of genealogy,
it would be, it had be to happen. Fantastic. Yeah.
All right. Favorite sci-fi movie for 2011?
Oh, let's see. What have I seen? What came out this year? I should know. What are some of the ones that have come out this year? I can tell you which one of those.
Well, Source Code came out for us earlier in the year. Never Let Me Go, which is a little bit different pace, but I really enjoyed that.
I like Never Let Me Go quite a bit, yeah.
It's hard because there were so many superhero ones that for me just flopped.
Oh, yeah, like stuff like Green Lantern.
I couldn't even do it, sorry.
I had to watch that on an airplane, I think, flying. I feel like there's something recent. I should have won it automatically. There's something I saw that I liked a lot. Another Earth I saw. I liked Another Earth, but I have to admit, the same woman co-wrote another film that I liked quite a bit. So maybe you shouldn't put that on where I criticize someone's work, but she co-wrote this other movie called The Sound of My Voice, which maybe that's the one I'll use. The Sound of My Voice is also a sci-fi film.
Okay.
And I don't even remember her name, but you know, she's in Another Earth and co-wrote both those films. And it's very low budget sci-fi, but I thought it was very smart and very well done.
Are you talking about the actress, Britt Marling, or no?
I can't remember her name, but the movie's called The Sound of My Voice.
Okay.
It's the same lead actress from Another Earth, whose name is eluding me right now.
Britt Marling. I've been trying to get an interview with her, but she's busy. Funny that.
Yeah, she's become quite the hit, and they've got the Independent Spirits coming up and stuff. But I liked that one a whole lot. That was really, really quite a good film.
Okay.
And I certainly enjoyed. And I'm sure there were several others that I'm just not thinking of.
Yeah, I just can't think. There's so many.
That's what happens to me. There were several that I saw that I was very disappointed in, but that I wanted to be better. Because I do appreciate a good sci-fi. And, you know, when Moon came out, that was 2010, I guess. But when Moon came out, I was, you know, it's not a perfect film, but it's a film that really took its sci-fi premises seriously and held on to those. And
the subject.
And chose bigger ideas to tell with it. So I was very, very impressed with it. So
cool. All right. I'll let you be now, I think.
All right.
This is just too good to be true. All right. Thank you so much, Jeff. Sure.
Yeah, thank you.
This will be episode number 93 when it goes to air. 93. We're going for the 100. And our 100th is actually on Valentine's Day. There you go.
You'll have to think of a good romantic sci-fi movie.
I
guess I just made one.
Or a horror film, you know.
Yeah.
Valentine. How was that?
Maybe I'll get to talk to you again. You know, one of the piece that I just recently wrote that we're trying to get financing for right now is actually a monster movie that I want to make.
Cool.
I mean, it's a period piece horror film sort of set around the 1880s, 1890s.
Is it going to look like a Hammer horror film from the 1960s? Because I love those, just my own personal.
It's going to look like, I mean, it's kind of the homage. I mean, I like to try a bunch of weird stuff again with this, but I am trying. It's going to be almost all practical effects, so it definitely will have a retro horror look to it that we're doing with a good monster and a lot of snow.
So when do you envision that?
I'm hoping to shoot that, you know, here we're right now, just starting winter.
Okay, yeah.
So about a year from now, I'd like to shoot it because we don't have the financing together to start shooting yet. So we'll need some pre-production time and it'll need to be snowy. Unless if I got it down sooner, maybe I could fly to the other hemisphere and go somewhere where it's winter in June or July and shoot it.
But you've really got to sort your budgeting out.
Yeah, exactly.
There's always New Zealand, of course. Although
that would be a great place to
go. Peter Jackson runs that now, that place. It's full of hobbits.
Yeah.
Hello. My name's Lawrence R. Harvey, and I play Martin in the Human Centipede 2 full sequence. You're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
And, of course, I don't know if you knew Ken Russell, but Ken Russell, the English filmmaker, but he did a great film called Gothic. So,
yes,
loved that.
Gothic, yeah. I have not gotten to see Gothic yet.
I think that might help.
I would like to see it because I actually have heard some good things. A good friend of mine who is a big and actually some of these things, you know, I was on a lot of the Fantastic Fest circuit doing some of these festivals, so I got to talk to a lot of people who watch a little more horror. But Gothic had gotten really great, and Ken Russell's good. You know, he's a really interesting filmmaker anyway. So.
Definitely not popular, but I mean popular in a lot of camps. But
sometimes that's the better way to be. It lets you make films that are so much more personal and more like. You know, more like the filmmaker and a little less like a giant industry. So I don't always mind that.
All right. Well, I better go back to work. Let you go too. I hope you have a great day.
Thanks. You too.
Nothing's changed. We still can't get married. I'm not meeting you personally, but we still don't have same-sex marriage.
Do you have
anything
better over there? Have they fixed any of that over there?
No. They're doing something called a conscience vote, and basically it means, they're going to try and not do it although I think the pressure's now going to mount, because before, personally, I think people were like thinking, oh, well, you know, we'll go state by state by state, civil unions in some states. But I think now, after the weekend's just gone, pretty unhappy people, including myself. And I think it's definitely going to be soon by election.
Every time we make any progress here, you know, it's always small. There was I went to this thing called The Moth, where they do storytelling, and there was a guy last night who had been part of the military and had been a translator and a soldier, and ended up, when he came out, he was going to get a dishonorable discharge and all of the other things, and he really led the fight for changing the don't ask, don't tell policy. And one of the things he had done is he'd given his, you know, West Point ring to a member of Congress. And but he had a great line. He was telling the story when he got the ring back, when they finally changed that law earlier this year on don't ask, don't tell. And he said, you know, he appreciated that change, but the next time he gets a ring from a man, you know, he wants it to be able to be getting married, you know, and just sort of pointing out that he was going to keep pushing, you know, this isn't enough rights, you know, how about equal rights? We should have evolved this far, at least. But
it is keep the pressure on.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's, hopefully people keep pushing and eventually changes get made. You know, the hope is sooner rather than later. And it's hard not to give up every time something doesn't happen.
I know, you can get sort of down and depressed. Like, I was depressed on Saturday, and then on Sunday I thought, you know what? I saw so much anger going on Facebook. I thought, right, let's mobilize ourselves and carry on.
Yep, and keep pushing for it, because I won't even say it always works, but it works better than doing nothing.
That's
so,
it. All right, Jeff, I don't want to hold anyone up, so I better let you go. But thanks so much for talking to us on Sci-Fi and Scream this evening.
Great. Take care.
Take care. Cheers. Right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Hello, this is Jeff Marslet, the director of the film Mars, and you are listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Sci-Fi and Scream was synthesized and squashed into shape by Sonia. For more information, visit our Facebook page, Sci-Fi and Scream, or check out joy.org.au.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.